Please give your attention to Randy as he comes forth and brings our message today.
Well, my time is sort of sparse today. And I'd like to welcome everybody here to Sabbath services. Landis, we're going to have to get you to do that special one of these days. On July 4th, 1776, a major milestone was signed with 56 signatures in Congress representing the 13 states of this nation. That milestone is known as the Declaration of Independence. It's declaring our independence from oppressive England. One portion of that document reads, quote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." As we can see from this short statement, the founders of this nation established certain laws that guaranteed our freedom in this nation. They established laws protecting and promoting self-liberty and the pursuit, it says, of happiness. Now, these principles included the freedom of religion, freedom to own property, free from oppression, free to a right trial, and the concept of absolute law, which we've lost today. Now, while many of these freedoms and concepts can still be seen in this day and age, they are being lost. But yet in the beginning, they were there, they existed. My goal for this message is to show through Yahweh's word, specifically the Torah, I'm going to focus on the Torah, how much of this nation was founded on the precepts of Yahweh's word. Now, while many of these freedoms again are being lost, originally they were founded and ingrained in Yahweh's word, the same word we have today. You know, many people today would like to see the religion that we still have in this nation eradicated, erased, vanished. People today, as prophecy foretells, want nothing to do with morality, with a standard set down by our Creator. People rather have the freedom to live as they choose, to engross themselves in sin without thought of fear or judgment. To achieve this, many are trying to rewrite the history of this nation. One of the most pervasive places, I believe, that we see this being done is in today's universities, the young minds of this nation. It seems that the more prestigious the university, the more of an anti-religion, religious outlook it holds. For example, as a junior in a university in Monterey, California, my sister was required to take a class showing how many of the early innovators and founders of this nation were sodomites. And they showed letters and documentation and said, "Here's your proof," a class to show nothing more how our founders, innovators, were sodomites for the purpose of acceptance. Now, no matter how hard these people might try to rewrite history, we here know the truth. We know that many of the same laws and truths that were established at the initiation, the beginning of this nation, were done so on the basis of Yahweh's word. We're going to see that today. Most of these men were very religious and looked to Yahweh's word for wisdom and discretion that we have today through Yahweh's word. We can see that through such documents as the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence. All these documents show the desire to mold this nation according to the morality that we have in Yahweh's word. In this message, I plan to look at four different principles that we find in both the foundation of this nation and in Yahweh's word, His Torah specifically. The four principles I plan to look at are personhood, I'll explain that later, fair trial, property, and law, absolute law. Again, all four of these principles are not only found in this nation's past and some present, but also in Yahweh's word. I'd like to begin by looking at the principle of personhood. This principle means that every law-abiding person should be safe and protected. Now, we know that the founders of this nation, along with modern law, are supposed to guarantee this right. But what about Yahweh's word? What does Yahweh's word say about personal safety and protection? Let's find out. Exodus chapter 20. Exodus chapter 20, verse 13. The Ten Commandments, the foundation of Yahweh's Torah. Verse 13 says, "You shall not commit murder." Here we have the sixth commandment again, "You shall not commit murder." So Yahweh from the beginning set down a law that guaranteed a person's safety and protection, that personhood. Now we know that even from Genesis, did Yahweh prohibit murder? He prohibited murder from the beginning. Remember what happened when Cain killed Abel. There was no law before that, but yet Cain knew that he did something wrong. We know that Cain was cursed when he killed his brother Abel for his jealousy. So much so that he told Yahweh that my punishment is more than I can bear. So we see a very strong connection there between thou shalt not murder, all the way back in the life of Cain, all the way back with the first family. So again, from the beginning of time, from the beginning of man, has Yahweh prohibited murder and given a law for man's safety and protection. Let's now turn to Exodus chapter 21, verse 16, a law of slavery, again, pertaining to personhood. Exodus chapter 21, verse 16 says, "And he that steals a man and sells him, or if he is found in his hand, he shall surely be put to death." Yahweh here commands against taking a person and selling him as a slave. In other words, making a profit on another man's freedom. A perfect illustration of what we see here is when Joseph's brothers sold him into slavery, which we know that he eventually wound up in Egypt as a slave, although we do know that that was Yahweh's will, that he saved his family. According to the JPS Torah commentary, during this time that this law was given, slave trading was common in the Middle East, in this part of the world. And for this reason, Israel was not the only one with a law against slave trading. I thought this was somewhat fascinating. For example, the law of Hammurabi, the sixth king of the first dynasty of Babylon, also prescribed death for kidnapping and selling a person into slavery. The penalty was death. The same was true for Hittite law. The Hittites also punished kidnapping, but not with execution. Instead, they punished the kidnapper with economic restitution. They had to pay a fine or a penalty. So here we see that through the wisdom of the word that Yahweh prohibits slave trading and the taking away of a person's personal freedom. Again, the protection of personhood. The same concept that our founders established in this nation 250 years ago. Now, not only do I believe that this law prohibits the slavery that the people of this nation once partook in, but also prohibits those who sold their own people into slavery. You see, oftentimes we only hear one side of the equation. The fact is, many of the slaves in this nation were sold to white merchants by their own countrymen, by their own people, which is really what this passage is referring to, what Joseph's brothers did to him. Although it does also include slavery as we partook in this nation. So again, according to Yahweh's word, there's no excuse for earning a profit on another person's personal freedom. As the framers of our Constitution wrote, again, all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator. Each one of us contains this right, both according to our Constitution, according to the Declaration of Independence, and according to Yahweh's word. Turn now with me to chapter, or let's look at verse 18. Verse 18, chapter 21, verse 18. "And if men quarrel, and if one hits the other with a stone or with his fist, and he dies not but keeps his bed," meaning he's in bed rest, "if he rises again and walk abroad on his staff, then shall he that hit him be absolved. Only he shall pay for the loss of his time and shall cause him to be thoroughly healed." Now, this passage is basically dealing with restitution. We see this type of activity every day in our courtrooms, restitution. Yahweh commands here that if two people got into a dispute, if one person became physically injured, preventing him from working and being able to function in life, that he who injured the person must pay restitution for his injury and also loss of work. So this is a concept we find in Yahweh's Word. Now again, cases like this can be found every day in our courtrooms. And the concept of personal restitution, as we see here, when it's the fault of another, is a principle that we do find in Yahweh's Word. Restitution, responsibility, right here in Yahweh's Word. Now, I believe that many of these cases today are fraud and are motivated by greed, which we know that Yahweh's Word doesn't allow. But the fact that we do see he does allow restitution, responsibility when we do something wrong. Yahweh gave this law not for personal greed, but for honest compensation for when a person has been wronged by another. You know, we can find all throughout Yahweh's Word the principle of restitution. You know, even Yahshua's sacrifice is a type of restitution. Think about it. What did Yahshua do when he died for us? What did he do? He paid our penalty for us. That was his restitution on our behalf. He paid our penalty. He died so that we might have an opportunity to live. He gave himself as a restitution for our penalty, for our sins, for our iniquities. Turn with me now to Deuteronomy chapter 27. Deuteronomy chapter 27. Again, we're still dealing with personhood here. Deuteronomy chapter 27, verse 18 says, "Cursed is he that makes the blind to wander out of his way." So again, here's another passage dealing with personhood. Yahweh commands in no uncertain terms that if we take advantage of somebody who is physically disadvantaged, handicapped in some way, that we will be cursed. That we will be cursed. Even for those who are not able to fully fend for themselves, does Yahweh's word protect? Does Yahweh protect through the wisdom of his writings, of his scripture? Yahweh's love and concern for mankind is for all. We know that. Not only for the strong, but also for the weak. For the weak. You know, how often do we find Yahweh saying, care for the widow, the fatherless, for those who are disadvantaged? Yahshua's own brother James defined pure religion this way, quote, to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction. That's how he defined pure religion. It wasn't keeping the Sabbath, the feast days, tithing. It was visiting those who are weak, those who have not. We know that Yahshua himself was deeply concerned for the disadvantaged. There was more than one occasion where he was moved, we can read, with great compassion. What we see here through Yahweh's law is no different from the concern that Yahshua showed by example during his ministry. The same concern for the weak and deprived that Yahshua and his apostles taught is found here in the Torah. That's the foundation. That's the foundation in Yahweh's word. Yahweh says again that in no way are we to take advantage of those who are handicapped in some way, who are disadvantaged. As Yahweh's people, it's our responsibility to help those who are weak, to help those who are deprived, who are destitute in some way. It's our responsibility, and I believe indeed our duty, to follow Yahweh's word. And in Yahshua's examples, when it comes to the need of those who have not, those who are disadvantaged. Let's now move on to our second principle, and that is property. When our founders composed the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, they were insistent on the freedom of land ownership, so much so that 6 of the first 10 amendments, directly or indirectly, pertained to private property rights. For example, the 5th Amendment states, quote, "Nor shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for private use without just compensation." From all evidence, when this nation was founded, it was the intentions of our founding fathers to protect the right of individual land ownership. Now, what about Yahweh's word? What does Scripture say about land ownership, personal property? Let's find out. Exodus chapter 20. Exodus chapter 20, verse 15. There we read in verse 15, "You shall not steal. You shall not steal." As Yahweh protected our personhood through the 6th commandment, he protects our property through the 8th. Think about if everyone in this world would only follow this eighth command. Think about that. Think about the positive consequences that this world would reap if no one ever stole again. Out of all the commandments, this short but profound command protects our property, I believe, more than any other. More than any other, this is protection of our property. Now, we know that someday that this command will be followed. It will be able to trust that our land, our property, what we own, will be safe and secure. We know that that day will take place in the millennium during Yahshua's reign, when he governs this earth with righteousness, when he rules with equity, and as it says, an iron rod for those who will not listen. Exodus chapter 22, verse 1. Exodus chapter 22, verse 1, another passage dealing with property. It says, if a man shall steal an ox or a sheep or kill it or sell it, he shall pay five oxen for an ox and four sheep for a sheep. So here we see, again, the concept of restitution. If that thief is found breaking in and is struck so that he dies, the defender is not guilty of bloodshed. If the sun has been risen upon him, he shall be guilty of bloodshed. He shall make restitution. If he has nothing, then he shall be sold for his thief or theft. I'd like to stop here for just a second and explain what is meant in verses 2 and 3. Now, what is being discussed here is someone breaking into your house and the punishment that is permissible. Since verse 3 is speaking about the daylight hours, it's assumed by a rabbinic interpretation, which I agree with, that verse 2 is speaking about the evening or night hours, although it's not explicitly mentioned there. So what we see here is this. If someone breaks in at night, and because of the darkness is killed by the owner, that owner is deserving of no punishment. There's no crime committed. But if the person breaks in during the day and is killed by the owner, according to this, is guilty of bloodshed or murder. So according to Yahweh's word, it isn't permissible to kill a thief when no immediate danger is present. And I think that's the point here for this command. When we can see in the daylight, and when we have other options besides taking a human life, we're to pursue those options first. Taking a life should only be done as a last resort. And again, I believe that's the reason why Yahweh says what he does here. He doesn't want to encourage the taking of a life. At all possible costs, save that life. Let's continue with verse 4. If the thief is found in his hand alive for theft, whether it is ox or donkey or sheep, he shall pay double. Again, restitution. If a man shall cause a field or vineyard to be eaten and shall let his beast loose, and it feeds in another's field, man's field, of the best of his own field and of the best of his own vineyard, shall he make restitution. If fire breaks out and spreads into thorns so that the shocks of grain or the standing grain where the field are consumed, he that kindled the fire shall surely make restitution. These arsonists who are kindling all these fires in California, can you imagine the restitution that would require? But yet it might resolve some of these problems. These people might not be so quick to start these fires and cause millions and billions of dollars in damage. Verse 7, if a man shall deliver to his neighbor money or stuff to keep, and if it is stolen out of the man's house, if the thief is found, he shall pay double. If the thief is not found, then the master of the house shall come near to Elohim to see whether he has put his hand to his neighbor's goods. For every matter of trespass, whether it be of ox, for donkey, for sheep, for raiment, or for any manner of lost thing of which one says, this is it, the cause of both parties shall come before Elohim. He whom Elohim shall condemn shall pay double to his neighbor. So the priest had a method of determining here whether or not this person was guilty, whether he stole the merchandise or whether it was stolen from his house. Verse 10, if a man delivers to his neighbor on a donkey or a ox or sheep or any beast to keep, and he dies or is hurt or driven away, no man seeing it, the oath of Yahweh shall be between them both, whether he has put his hand to his neighbor's goods, and the owner of it shall accept it, and he shall not make restitution. But if it is stolen from him, he shall make restitution to the owner of it. If it is torn in pieces, let him bring it for a witness. He shall make restitution that which was torn. Verse 14, if a man borrows anything of his neighbor, and if it is hurt or dies, the owner of it not being with it, he shall surely make restitution. That's a concept that we should live by today. If we borrow something, if we break it or it becomes unusable for whatever reason, we should replace it. It's our responsibility as Yahweh's people to make it right, to make it right, to pay restitution. If the owner of it is with it, he shall not make it good. It is a hired thing. It came for its hire. So here is the law of restitution. And as we've already seen throughout Yahweh's word, we see a strong concept of personal restitution. Yahweh knew that a civilization could not exist without personal responsibility in the way of restitution. I was watching Fox News this last week, and they were discussing the psychological impact of today's prisons. The report was basically stating that the environment in prisons is counterproductive to the rehabilitation of criminals. Not only are prisons, it was saying, breed more crime, but there's no motivation to change. There's no motivation to change. And I will take it a step further and say it doesn't promote restitution and consequence for the crime. If criminals had to pay back what they stole or for the damage they caused or whatever the circumstance was, I think you would see criminals repenting and turning from their sin. But again, our prisons, our criminal establishment doesn't promote that. It doesn't promote restitution. If a thief had to pay back what he or she stole, double, again, I think that you would see them think twice about committing that crime. If we would follow Yahweh's way of penalizing criminals, crime, I believe that much of our crime, much of the sin that we have in this nation would just be eradicated. You would see it vanish overnight if people would be punished as Yahweh says to punish, because Yahweh's way is the right way. You can't convince me that following Yahweh's method of punishment is not the right way of punishing. Some of it seems severe, but I believe Yahweh knew exactly what he was doing, and it's for our good. It's for our good. Numbers chapter 36, verse 1. Now this passage is speaking about inheritance mainly, but there's a point here, and I'm going to make it after I read it here. Numbers 36, verse 1 says, the heads of the father's houses of the family of the children of Gilead, when the son of Machir, the son of Manasseh, one of the families of the son of Joseph, came near and spoke before Moses and before the princesses, the heads of the father's houses of the children of Israel. And they said, Yahweh commanded my leader to give the land for inheritance by lot to the children of Israel, and my superior was commanded by Yahweh to give the inheritance of Zelophehad, our brother, to his daughters. And if they be married to any of the sons of other tribes of the children of Israel, then will their inheritance be taken away from the inheritance of our fathers, and will be added to the inheritance of the tribe to which they shall belong. So will it be taken away from the lot of our inheritance, and when the jubilee of the children of Israel shall be, then will their inheritance be added to the inheritance of the tribe to which they shall belong. So will their inheritance be taken away from the inheritance of the tribe of our fathers. Now, before I elaborate on what we see here, we need to understand one important point, and that is that it was the job of Moses to divide the promised land in according to the 13 tribes of Israel. You say 13. We know that the tribe of Joseph was expanded to two tribes representing his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. As we see here, there was no male relative who could claim the portion of Zelophehad's inheritance, part of the tribe of Manasseh. So Moses here agrees to give the inheritance to their daughters. Now the stipulation and the problem being discussed here is this, because the inheritance was normally passed on through the men, Zelophehad's inheritance would have been lost if his daughters would have married outside the tribe, even after the Jubilee. We know that every Jubilee, the land returned to the original owners. In this case, it would have remained with the husband. So they would have lost that inheritance, that tribe, Manasseh. So to prevent this from happening, Moses determined that Zelophehad's inheritance would be reckoned through his daughters. they would not lose that inheritance. The main point here, the main principle I'm trying to make here is ownership of property was central in Yahweh's word. It was absolutely imperative in Yahweh's word, ownership of property. Again, while there are fundamental differences between Yahweh's word and this nation when it comes to property, we see that both promoted and promote the principle of land ownership. And we see here a strong, strong principle of inheritance. And I believe that Yahweh's word throughout Genesis to Revelation promotes the concept of inheritance. Let's now move on to the third principle. That is a right to a fair trial. And I'm somewhat maybe passionate about this because I see so much evidence for this. When our founding fathers founded this nation, one point that they were adamant about was that all men should be afforded a fair and speedy trial without bias or prejudice. For example, the Sixth Amendment in our Bill of Rights states the following, quote, "In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed." And it goes on. When it comes to Yahweh's word, Yahweh is absolutely no different. One of the most important common themes in Scripture is judgment without bias or partiality. And we can apply this to us in so many different ways. It goes as far as our president, our leaders, to the relationships that we have with one another. Let's take a look at this. Exodus chapter 23. Exodus chapter 23, verse 6. "You shall not pervert the justice due to your poor in his cause. Keep far from a false matter and do not kill the innocent and righteous, for I will not justify the wicked. And you shall take no bribe, for a bribe blinds them that have sight and perverts the words of the righteous." But the New Revised Standard Version, verse 6 reads, "You shall not pervert justice due to your poor in their lawsuits." Yahweh forbids that we skew judgment just because a person might be poor. Maybe they can't afford an attorney. Whatever the case might be, that we're not to be biased because of their wealth or lack of. What's really sad is that this is one of the most common problems, I believe, in our nation today. For the most part, it doesn't matter if you're guilty or not. What matters is how good of an attorney you can afford. Like everything else in this day and age, today's courtrooms are driven, I believe, by the almighty dollar. If you can afford a slick, deceptive, high-priced attorney, chances are you'll be found innocent. By and large, today's justice system is not based on truth. It's based on money, power, and I believe corruption. In this passage, Yahweh also forbade the taking of a bribe. The taking of a bribe. Not only is this a huge point of corruption in the justice system, it's also a problem, if not the most significant, in my opinion, in today's politics. My wife worked for the Missouri Senate, and just from what I've heard and observed from her and on a state level, is enough to, for me to show the negative impact of taking bribes, taking gifts. In politics, these people are called lobbyists. And again, I believe are the main reason for the corruption we see today. The only purpose that lobbyists have is to buy votes or to persuade or distort votes. Yahweh knew that when a gift was entangled into a decision, whether in judgment or politics, he knew that it would end in corruption. Yahweh commanded in no uncertain terms that bribes were not to be given, that were to refuse them. Let's look at Leviticus chapter 19. Brother Jim read this as today's Torah reading. Let's return back to Leviticus chapter 19, verse 15. It says here, "You shall not do unrighteousness in judgment. You shall not respect the face of the poor, nor honor the face of the mighty, but in righteousness you shall judge your neighbor." In righteousness. Verse 35, drop down to verse 35, says, "You shall do no unrighteousness in judgment in measures of length, of weight, or of quantity. Just balances, just weights, a just ephah, and a just hin shall you have." Very simply put, Yahweh is commanding here impartiality when it comes to judgment. When we're before a judge, it shouldn't matter how rich or poor we are, how famous or unknown we are. The judgment should be based and made on the proof at hand. You can probably think of 100 cases in which impartiality entered into a case. For example, O.J. Simpson won his criminal case but lost his civil case. Now, if you're innocent, how can you lose one case, the criminal case? Or he won the criminal case, but how can you lose one case and win the other? It doesn't make sense. And what about all these cases with these famous athletes, with these movie stars, basketball players and baseball players and football players, these horrible crimes? You know, it seems like they can get by with murder for no other reason besides their name and their fame. Think about how our courtrooms would change if our judges in this nation would judge with impartiality and objectively on the evidence. The major problem, though, with this nation is that our judges no longer use Yahweh's word or even our Constitution, largely, to formulate decisions. Judges are now making decisions on the popularity of the masses. That was never the intent. On international law, why would we base our law on someone else's law? Makes no sense. And on humanistic ideology. There's cases, there's documentation to support these statements. Deuteronomy chapter 1. Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 16. And I charge your judges at that time, saying, hear the causes between your brethren, and judge righteously between a man and his brother and the sojourner that is with him. You shall not respect persons in judgment. You shall hear the small and the great alike, and you shall not be afraid of the face of man, for the judgment is Elohim's. And the cause that is too hard for you, you shall bring to me, and I will hear it. We see here basically the same directives as we saw in Leviticus 19. Yahweh reiterates that we're to judge between the small and the great alike. In other words, there should be no favoritism, no impartiality in judgment. Yahweh also says here that when it comes to judgment, we should not be afraid of man. We should not be afraid of man because we know that the judgment is of Yahweh's word. It's his judgment, not ours. You know, people say we're judging them. We don't judge anybody. We're simply discerning what Yahweh's word says. If it says it's an abomination, that's what it is. We're not judging them. Yahweh's word has already made the judgment for us. And that's what we see here. It's not our judgment, it's Yahweh's judgment. Yahweh's already pre-established it within his word. A judge and even a minister must have the courage and be not afraid to make those hard decisions. When it comes to Yahweh's word and judgment, we can't let anything, including fame, power, fear, or even friendship, family, to allow favoritism or bias to enter in. Deuteronomy chapter 10 now. Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 17. For Yahweh, your Elohim, he is El of Elohim, and sovereign of rulers, the great El, the mighty and the terrible, who regards not persons nor takes reward. He executes justice for the fatherless and widow, and loves the sojourner, giving him food and raiment. We know that we're created in Yahweh's image. The same emotions that we share as mankind, I believe, is a mirror image of our Father in heaven. By the same way, just as Yahweh commands that we judge without bias or partiality, Yahweh does the same. Yahweh does the same. As it says here, Yahweh doesn't regard persons or takes bribes or gifts. He doesn't do it. You know, what kind of Father in heaven would Yahweh be if he commanded one thing for us and did the other? This would be nothing more than hypocrisy. And one thing we know for certain is that Yahweh is no hypocrite. If Yahweh says to do something, you know he's doing it. Not to get off the topic, but I believe that this is one of the most common reasons why children misbehave. You know, the Bible says that if we raise a child in the way he should go, that he will not depart from that way, from that path. He won't depart. He will stay on that path. For these children who fall away from the faith, I believe the reason often comes down to hypocrisy on the parents. You know, we don't want to see that. We don't want to point the finger our way, but often I believe it's hypocrisy on the parents. If we who are parents don't live the faith, don't lead by example, and that's the key, leading by example, showing by what we do, then we only have ourselves to blame when our children go astray. But when it comes to judgment, as we see here, Yahweh's no different. Without exception, when Yahweh judges mankind, he does so without hypocrisy and impartiality. It doesn't matter who you are. When old Uzzah touched that ark, he was killed. His life was taken. Yahweh had no anger for him, but he did something he should not have done. And he was judged for what he did. Deuteronomy chapter 16, verse 18. Judges and officers shall you make yourselves in all your gates, which Yahweh your Elohim gives you according to your tribes, and they shall judge the people with righteous judgment. You shall not wrest judgment or justice. You shall not respect persons, neither shall you take a bribe. Notice how many times we're reading this, not to take a bribe. Not to take a bribe. For a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and perverts the words of the righteous. Yahweh says again that we're not to judge with prejudice or impartiality, but to judge righteously, to judge according to his infallible word. He also commands here that we take no bribes in judgment. We've already talked about this. Again, anyone who knows me knows how I detest lobbyists and politics. In my opinion, there's not a greater crime in government than the allowance of lobbyists. The same also goes for the medical industry and whatever other industry that might thrive on these who buy the votes. You know, most cases, the only reason for lobbyists is to buy votes, to persuade with a gift, to persuade with a bribe. Why else are they there? What's the point? All the NBA tickets, the boats, the cars, probably the homes when you get on the federal level. Who knows? Why else are they there but to sway votes of our politicians? I believe that this perverts politics and is the one paying for this perversion is you and I. This is the reason why Yahweh is so adamant about taking bribes and judgment, gifts. As Yahweh says here, and as we've all probably seen, when a person receives a bribe, it blinds their eyes to the truth. It distorts our judgment. Because let's face it, there's a part in each of us probably that would give in. Hopefully there's not. And I pray that we're all stronger than that. But here Yahweh says that it blinds even the eyes of the righteous. Even the righteous, it blinds the eyes. And Yahweh says, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't take a bribe. Don't take a bribe. Let's move on to our last principle here, an important principle, maybe the most important principle, and that is that no one is above the law. No one. When our founders founded and established this nation, they understood that the rule of law was absolutely essential to the security and prosperity of this nation. They knew it. For example, Thomas Paine, a man instrumental for his writing during the Revolutionary War, wrote this in 1776, quote, "In America, the law is king. For as in absolute governments, the king is law, so in free countries, the law ought to be king, and there ought to be no other." A man of wisdom, I would say. For Israel, the rule of law was no different. Yahweh and his word was king, and everyone from the least to the greatest was under that rule of law, with no exception. Deuteronomy chapter 5. Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 28. "And Yahweh heard the voice of your words when you spoke to me, and Yahweh said to me, I heard the voice of the words of the people which they have spoken to you. They have well said all that they have spoken. Oh, that there were such a heart in them that they would fear me and keep all my commandments always, that it might be well with them and well with their children forever. Go, say to them, return to your tents. But as for you," and he's speaking to Moses here, "stand here by me, and I will speak to you all the commandments and the statutes and the ordinances which you shall teach them, that they may do them in the land which I give them to possess. You shall observe to do therefore as Yahweh your Elohim has commanded you. You shall not turn aside to the right hand or to the left. You shall walk in all the way which Yahweh Elohim has commanded you, that you may live, and that it may be well with you, that you may prolong your days in the land which you shall possess. As we see from this passage, Israel is governed by Yahweh's law. After Moses received the second giving of the law, the people all agreed that they would serve Yahweh by obeying him, by obeying his commandments first and foremost. Yahweh says here that, oh, that there were such a heart in them that they would fear me and keep my commandments. You know, I think that same desire is for us today, that we would fear Yahweh, that we would honor him by keeping his commandments, that we would align our lives according to his word. We see here that the keeping of the commandments were not in vain. They were not in vain for the Israelites. Yahweh promised that if they would obey, that if they would follow his commandments, that they would prolong their days, their lives, in the land that they would possess. Now we know that this promise was conditional, as it is for us. It was conditional on whether or not Israel would obey Yahweh's word. Now the promise given here, I believe, can be applied both physically and spiritually, and so much of Yahweh's word can be applied to us, even though it has an application to Israel, to Judah, whoever. And I believe that this same concept holds true here. We can apply this to us. Now we know that the Israelites physically entered into the promised land, the land of Canaan. But I believe that this passage is also a foreshadow of Yahweh's kingdom that will come down from heaven to this earth. For Israel then, and for us now, if we live according to all of Yahweh's commandments, we'll be blessed with long life, matter of fact, eternal life. And Yahweh's promised kingdom, a kingdom much greater than what the Israelites inherited long ago, an everlasting kingdom with Yahweh ruling on his throne. Deuteronomy chapter 17, verse 18. Now this is the rules, the laws of a king. Verse 18 says, it shall be that he sets on the throne of his kingdom that he shall write a copy of this law in a book. That he shall write it. Notice that. That's important. He's going to be doing this writing. Out of that which is before the priests, the Levites, that it shall be with him, and he shall read it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear Yahweh his Elohim, to keep all his words of this law and these statutes, to do them. That his heart is not lifted up above his brethren, and that he turns not aside from the commandment to do to the right hand or to the left, to the end that he may prolong his days in his kingdom, he and his children in Israel. As we see here, Yahweh's law was absolute for all Israelites. No one was above or greater than Yahweh's word. No one. Even the king was beneath Yahweh's word. There were no executive orders that superseded the authority of Yahweh's law. As we see here, Israel's king was commanded to have a copy of this law beside him so that he might learn to obey and to fear his maker, to fear Yahweh. Now think about just for a moment the impact that we would see in this nation today if our president, if our leaders would follow this command, would have this law, Yahweh's word, right beside them, reading it, learning how to fear him. Think about the positive consequences that would follow if our politicians obeyed and feared Yahweh. They put him first. If we as a nation, including our leaders in power, were learned to obey and fear our Maker, we would have peace and enjoy prosperity in this nation like never before in its history. It would be amazing. And that type of environment we will achieve in Yahweh's kingdom. Yahweh knew that the only way a civilization could continue in success, I believe, in prosperity, was through the keeping of his word. If every person in this nation understood this basic truth, if only every person understood this. As I said in the beginning of my message, people today rather live in sin. They rather live in sin, and they rather have anarchy and chaos when it comes to right and wrong. People don't understand the value and benefits of living Yahweh's word. Just the environment, the world, it would we would have success, and there's no words to describe the prosperity and the happiness that we would all enjoy. For a closing passage, turn to Deuteronomy chapter 30. Chapter 30, verse 8. And you shall return and obey the voice of Yahweh and do all his commandments which I command you this day. And Yahweh Elohim will make you plenteous in all the work of your hand and the fruit of your body and the fruit of your cattle and the fruit of your ground for good. For Yahweh will again rejoice over you for good as he rejoiced over your fathers. If you shall obey the voice of Yahweh Elohim to obey his commandments and his statutes, which are written in this book of the law, if you turn to Yahweh Elohim with all your heart and with all your soul. You see, we can't go part way. We have to go all the way with Yahweh's word, a full commitment, with all our heart, with all our soul. For this commandment which I command you this day, it is not too hard for you, neither is it far off. It is not in heaven that you should say, who shall go up for us to heaven, and bring it to us, and make us to hear it, that we may do it. Neither is it beyond the sea, that you should say, who shall go over the sea for us, and bring it to us, and make us hear it, that we might do it. But the word is very near to you, in your mouth, and in your heart, that you may do it. See, I have set before you this day life and good, and death and evil, and that I command you this day to love Yahweh your Elohim, to walk in his ways, to keep his commandments and his statutes and his ordinances, that you may live and multiply, and that Yahweh your Elohim may bless you in the land which you shall go in to possess. Yahweh says here that his word is not too hard, it's not too far, it's not too far off. Yahweh says that it's near, it's in our mouth, it's in our heart, so that we might do it. What Yahweh is saying here is simply this: you have my word. You have no excuse to disobey. You have not a single excuse to disobey. It's not in heaven. It's not over the sea. It's right here. It's right here within our hearts, within our minds. You see, what Yahweh offered Israel, he offers to us today. And really, it comes down to two choices. Number one, obey and seek life. Or two, disobey and seek death. There's no third choice. There's no option C or D or E or F. Two choices. And it's up to us to pursue the one. The same choice, again, holds true for us. Yahweh has given his word to us, and it's up to us whether or not we will obey. One thing about Yahweh is that he doesn't force us to obey. And why should he? He's given each of us a free will to either accept or deny his word. The one thing, though, that is absolutely imperative to understand is that there's consequences to the choice we make. Many people don't understand that today. There's consequences to the choice we make. Again, many people believe today that we can live life as we see fit without consequence to our sin or behavior. That's a lie. That's a deception. Nothing more. We can live life as we choose, but we better keep in mind that there's consequences for what we do and how we live. Both Yahshua and Paul said that we would be judged on our works, how we lived with what we knew, with what we understood at the time. You know, no matter how people might try to slice it, many of the same principles that we read in Yahweh's word are the same principles we find in this nation when it was founded by our forefathers. I believe that our forefathers looked at Yahweh's word and applied the principles therein to this nation. This is their goal. This was their goal. Most of these men had great aspirations, I believe, to build a free nation that was based on the morality and the virtues that we find in the word. Now, over the 250 years of this nation's existence and history, we've seen some startling change for the worse. And I believe this trend will continue as time goes on. As many of our forefathers sought for, we must learn to overcome, to come out of sin, and to hopefully live in the morality of Yahweh's word. And may Yahweh bless you all.